Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Bava Metzia, daf Mem Gimel. We are holding at the top of Mem Gimel, Amud Aleph, at the first line of the Mishnah. The Gemara in Amud Aleph today is basically going to discuss depositing money with different types of people, a money changer, a normal person, a store owner, and whether that person has the right to use the money or not, depending on how you gave it to him. Then at the bottom of Amud Aleph, the Gemara is going to discuss paying back something that was stolen when the value of the item appreciated or decreased in value. Depending on when you stole it, when you used it, etc. And that discussion is going to continue onto Amud Beis. So let's begin with the Mishnah. Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, first line. Hamafkid mot etzel shulchani, misrurin lo yishtamish bahen. If a person deposits money with a money changer, if the money is sealed up, is closed off in some sort of handkerchief or something, or it's sealed tight, then the money changer is assumed to not be able to use them. The fact that the money was given over to him closed up, it is a signal that he's not supposed to use the money. And the fikachim avdu eino chayav b'achra yusan. Therefore, if the money becomes lost, the money changer would not be responsible for the loss of the money. Why not? Because he wasn't supposed to use them anyway. They were basically just given to him to hold on to, but not to use in any way. And therefore, he's not going to be responsible for anything that happens to them. So if they get lost, he wouldn't be obligated to them. Shom chinam, exactly. He's not chayav in aveida. But mutarin yishtamish b'hen. If the money is given over to him, open, not sealed up in any sort of bag or handkerchief or anything like that, that's a sign that yishtamish b'hen, that he is allowed to use the money. And the fikachim avdu chayav b'achra yusan. Therefore, if the money is lost, he is going to be responsible for the loss of the money, because he had permission to use them. He was like a shomer who's going to be obligated for aveda, and thus he would be responsible. So those are the dinim by a money changer who we assume generally does need a lot of money at his disposal to be able to use to change money for people. So there it makes a difference whether the money was given to him sealed up or not. But Eitzel Baal HaBayis, Bein Tzuruin Uvein Mutarin Lo Yishtamish Behen. Says the Mishnah, if you give it to a regular person, not a money changer, who doesn't constantly need cash flow to be able to change money for different people, then even if you give him the money open, still he's not allowed to use them. Whether it's sealed up or it's open, still he cannot use them. And therefore, if the money is lost, he's not going to be responsible for the loss of the money. In either case, he's treated like a shomer chinam, who's not chayav for aveda. He's not supposed to use the money, and that would be the din by a regular balabayas. So now the Mishnah has a machlokas tanayim about a case which is in the middle. The shulchani, the money changer, is on one extreme. He constantly needs money. And there, maybe he'll have some rights to use the money in certain cases. A regular balabayas, a regular person, doesn't need money so frequently, and therefore he'll never have the rights to use the money. But what if you have a store owner who does have certain financial responsibilities? He's constantly buying things and selling things, but obviously he doesn't need the same amount of money at his disposal that a money changer would need, where he's constantly changing money for people. So what's going to be the status of a store owner? So that's going to be a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Chen v'ni kebalabayas, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that a store owner is just like a normal person, meaning whether the money is given to him sealed up or it's given in the open, he would not be allowed to use it. And therefore, if it's lost, he's not going to be chayav b'achrayusan. He won't be responsible. He'll be treated like a shomer chinam. But Rabbi Huda omer, chen v'ni kishulchani. Rabbi Huda says, no, a store owner is going to be treated like a money changer. We assume he does need money at his disposal. And therefore, if the money is given to him not sealed, that's a sign that he can use it. And if it's lost, he will be responsible. But if it's given to him sealed, that's a sign that he should not use it. And if it's lost, he will not be responsible.
Question on the first case, Shulchani, you're giving him money sealed up, right?
Right.
How does he know how much is there? How could you be mechayev him if he doesn't even know how much is in there?
Does he have to know?
How can you be mechayev somebody if you don't even know how much
is
possible?
He's putter.
Yeah, I think Rudy's saying, granted, he's putter, but how could there even be a possibility that he would be mechayev? He doesn't know what it is.
Shia. He would have to...
Wait a minute, how you Shia, you have to know... I didn't know
any
how much...
Someone says, so, I lost... I don't know...
It's not any day. I don't even know... You didn't even tell me... I don't even know how much I took responsibility for. How much money was in the bag.
Right, well, so he didn't really take responsibility for aveda because we're saying he's a shomer chinam, he wasn't supposed to use it. I would think the simple answer is, let's say a guy brings two edim, which testify that it was $100 that he had given him. So there you might say, okay, well, I have edim that can prove that it was $100.
What if the guy tells him himself? What if the mafkid tells him?
Right, so the question is if he'll be nehman, but so I think in
but
any
it
of
says
those...
He gave it to him. You're saying he opened...
They opened it up together, they counted it up, and they bumped it up together.
Yeah, yeah. So I think no matter...
You have to work something out.
Right, no matter how you work out the details.
The Mishnah is very terse. The Mishnah doesn't tell you all the fact, whole fact pattern.
I was going to tell you put it in a cellophane bag so you can see how much money was in there.
I'll put it in a cellophane bag.
But yes, I think the postulate would be, even if you could bring a proof as to how much money it was, still you're not going to be responsible because you were just the Shomer Chinam. You're not going to be responsible for the Aveda of the money. I think that would be the simple answer. So ask the Gemara, Mishum de Tzrurin lo yishtamish bahen? Just because the money was given to the money changer, sealed up, all of a sudden that's a sign that he's not supposed to use them? How is that a sign? Normally when you give something to somebody, you give it to him in a way that's, I don't know, put together. It's sealed up. If you look in Rashi, Rashi says, Mishum de Tzrurin lo yishtamish bahen, the first Rashi in the Gemara. Bitmiya, this is the Gemara is astonished. Uma gilu idas yesh kan she'ein chafet she'yishtamish bahen. How is the mafkid, how is the person depositing the money with the money changer showing that he doesn't want the person to use the money? You've told me that if the money is not sealed up, then the money changer is allowed to use them. And that's because the person who deposits the money with the money changer knows that he constantly needs money. If the money is sealed up, that should also be a sign of permission for the money changer to use the money. Because
it shouldn't be a sign that he shouldn't use
it. Right. Okay. Yeah. You could take it either direction. Either it should be a sign that he can, or it shouldn't be a sign that he can't. Because that's how people give money over. You constantly are sealing up your money. You assume that you're not just going to hand him a stack of bills, but maybe it'll be tied up in one of those, you know, ties that you get around the bills from the bank, or it'll be sealed up in some sort of way. So ask the Gemara, how is this a sign that he's not supposed to use the money? So Amar Basi, Amar Yehuda, Bitzruin V'chasumin Shanim. So now what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to try to increase the level of sealing in a way that would designate that you're not supposed to use the money. So Rav Asi, in the name of Rav Yehuda, says that we're dealing with a case where not only is the money sealed up, but it's also signed. There's some sort of signet or sign that the mafkid, the depositor, puts on the seal of the money. And that's a clear indicator that the money changer is not supposed to use the money. So we've elevated the level of sealing, and that's thus a sign that you cannot use the money. That's one answer. The Gemara has another answer, which is Rav Mari Amar Bekesher Mishuna. Rav Mari says we're dealing with a case where you seal it, you tie it up in a way that's strange, that's unusual. If you seal it up in a way that's unusual, that's a clear sign because, you know, going with the Gemara's initial question, just because the person sealed up the money, that's somehow a sign that he shouldn't use it. So yeah, if he sealed it in a normal way, maybe that wouldn't be a sign that he shouldn't use it. But if he seals it in an abnormal way, he's clearly trying to tell the money changer, I'm giving you this money and you're not supposed to use it. That's why I specifically went out of my way to seal it up in a strange way, and therefore he knows not to use it. That's Rav Mari's.
He can also verbalize it.
I assume he could also verbalize it. The Mishnah, I think, is dealing with the case where he didn't verbalize it for whatever reason. So the question is, how is the presentation of the money a sign in either direction, whether you should or you should not use the money? So that was the second answer the Gemara brought from Rav Mari. But Ika de Amri, there's another version of the Gemara where Rav Mari's answer was not brought as an answer, it was really brought as a question. Boy, Rav Mari, Kesher Mishuna Mai, asks Rav Mari, what's the din if the money is given over with a seal that's abnormal, that's unusual? And the Gemara says, Teku. We have to leave that over, Peleyahu Anavi. We're not sure what the halacha should be if the money is given over in an abnormal way with an abnormal seal. Is that a sign that the money changer cannot use it, or maybe it's not yet a sign necessarily? So that's Gemara's discussion about giving money over to a money changer, Tzurin. Now the Gemara goes on with Mutarin Yishtamish Ben. The Mishnah had said if you give money to a money changer and it's not sealed up, then the money changer is allowed to use the money. So Amar Rav Huna Va'afilu Nensu, says Rav Huna, the Mishnah had said that in the situation in which the money changer is allowed to use the money because it was given to him out in the open, then if the money is lost, he's responsible for the loss. And says Rav Huna, afilu nansu, even if the money was lost against his will by something that was completely out of his control, still the money changer would be responsible. So ask the Gemara, v'ha'avdu katani. The Mishnah said specifically if the money was lost. So how could you tell me that even if it happens in an ones, even if it happens against in something that was out of his control, you'd still be responsible? The Mishnah seemingly indicated that was only if the money was lost. So answers the Gemara, and we had seen something like this a couple weeks ago, Kidiraba, it really goes like the statement of Rabba, which is going to be made later on in the Masechta, but now this is already the second time that we're seeing it brought up in a different context. To Amar Rabba, Nignivu, Belista, Mizuyin, Rabba had qualified a certain case and said that when it said that something was stolen, that didn't mean it was just stolen by regular thieves who do gneva, which is concealed, but really it was referring to list and mizuyin. It was referring to armed robbers, which the Gemara assumes throughout is something that's completely out of your control. And avdu shetava suinoso bayam. And when we said that something was lost, that was referring to where your ship drowned at sea. And thus we see that's also something that's out of your control. And we see that the lashon of avdu, the lashon of something being lost, can be used to refer to something which is completely out of your control. So that's how Rav Huna could say that if the money changer is given money that's not sealed, he's going to be obligated even if something happens against his will. And the assumption is that that's because he's treated like a sholel. He's treated like a borrower, and a borrower is obligated in onsen. So according to Rav Huna, you'd be obligated even if something happens that's out of your control. The Rav Nachman Amar Nen Zulo. But Rav Nachman disagrees with Rav Huna, and he says, no, if something happens to the money that's out of your control, the money changer would not be responsible. So Amar Le Rava Le Rav Nachman, L'didach De Amarta Nen Zulo, Alma Lo Havisho Elalai. Says Rava to Rav Nachman, according to you, who just told me that if something happens to the money that's out of the control of the money changer, he would not be responsible, that shows clearly that he's not treated like a borrower. He's not treated like a shoel, because a shoel is obligated in Otsin. If we're saying he's not obligated in Otsin, he must not be a shoel. So asked Rava, based on that, Yishoel lohavi, shomer sachar nami lohavi. If he's not a borrower, then presumably he's also not treated like a paid watchman. He's not treated like a shomer sachar, and therefore he shouldn't necessarily be obligated in anything. Why is it that if he's not a borrower, he also is not treated like a paid watchman? So says Rashi, if we look in the Dura Maskil, V'yishoa lohavi, shomer sachar nami lohavi, towards the top, ma sachar natal ashmirasan. What schar, what payment, what wages is the money changer getting for watching this money? Ela al shesamach aleim la'achlifan ulustaker im yovo liyado ata mechaivo. The only reason you're obligating the money changer for whatever happens to the money is because he's relying on the money to be able to use, to exchange money for people and to make a profit in that way. And therefore, you're going to obligate him for whatever happens to the money. He says that should be treated like borrowing because he's getting all the benefit. He's getting all the hana. So what Rav is saying to Rav Nachman is, you're telling me that he's not obligated in onsen because he's not treated like a shoel. But then he also shouldn't be treated like a paid watchman, like a shomer sachar. And Rav is sort of trying to back Rav Nachman into saying he must be treated like a shoel and he should be obligated in own sin. But Rav Nachman is going to be able to defend himself. Says Rav Nachman, Amr le, b'cha modina lecha, d'ho v'ne mehane, b'ahu ana, di misrami le zvina, d'isbe revacha zavin behu, havi alayhu shomer sachar. So says Rav Nachman to Rav, no, I disagree with you. I do agree that he's not treated like a shoel, but the money changer does get hana from this money. Because if he finds some lucrative investment opportunity where he can buy something at a cheap price and make a great profit, that's considered a hana for him. And thus, he's treated like a paid watchman. He's treated like a shomer sachar. The hana that he gets from having the money and being able to use it if a great deal comes up is treated as schar, is treated as wages, is treated as reward, and that's why he is going to be obligated if something happens to the money. He will be obligated if the money is lost, but he will not be obligated in onsen. He will not be obligated if something out of his control happens to the money, because he's not treated like a shoel, only like a shomer sachar.
So if nothing comes up, what happens then if nothing comes up?
It's a shomer sachar.
If no investment opportunity comes up? I think what the Gemara is saying, correct
just,
me if I'm wrong.
Just having it available.
Just having it available. Just having the possibility, even if nothing comes up.
That's tough. So is there a bifurcation here? He's a shomer sachar because he has the money available. But if an opportunity does come up and he makes use of the money, he'll be a shoel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be. That could be. That maybe if he actually uses it, mm-hmm. that'll be treated like, let's say, like a shlichas yad or using the item, and he'll be treated like a shoel. I think that's possible. Yeah. Good. So that's machlokas Rav Huna Rav Nachman. Is he a shomer sachar? Is he a shoel? According to Rav Huna, he's a shoel. Therefore, he's even obligated if something happens that's out of his control, even an onsen. According to Rav Nachman, he's only a shomer sachar, and he's not going to be obligated if something happens out of his control. So now, Esevei Rav Nachman the Rava. Rav Nachman, who said he's treated like a shomer sachar, poses a kasha to Rav Huna, who says he's treated like a shoel. And this is coming from Me'ila, I believe. Yeah. Tosefta and Me'ila. Hamafkid Mos Eitzel Shulchani. Let's say you have, I think what we're talking about is you have this, the treasurer of Hekdesh, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash, who gives money to a money changer. Im Tsururin Lo Yishtamish Bahen. If the money is sealed up, then the money changer is not supposed to use them, right? Same exact din as we had in our Mishnah. Lefikach Im Hotzi Lo Ma'al HaKisbar. Therefore, if the money changer uses the money, which he was not supposed to do because it was given to him sealed up, then lo mal hakizbar. The treasurer of Hekdesh has not violated an Isser Me'ila. It's not as if he's misappropriated the funds of the Beis HaMikdash because he gave it to the money changer in a way that was clear that he should not use them. And thus, if the money changer does use them, the treasurer will not be responsible. Be'im mutarin yishtamish behen. But if the treasurer gives the money to the money changer not sealed, then the money changer is allowed to use the money. And the fikach im hotzi mal hagizbar. Therefore, if the money changer does use the money, then the treasurer would be obligated for me'ila. It'll be as if he misappropriated the money because he gave it over to the money changer in a way that was clear he should use them, and that the gizbar was not allowed to do. So ask the Gemara now, ask Rav Nachman, based on this case in me'ila, v'i amar afilu nansu, my ir yahotzi, afilu lo hotzi nami. If, according to Rav Huna, a money changer who's watching money that was given to him, not sealed, is treated like a shoel, is treated like a borrower, and he's going to be chayav even for onsen, then why did this Tosefta in Me'ila say that if the money changer uses the money, im hotzi, then the treasurer will be obligated for Me'ila? Even if the money changer did not use the money, but something like an ones happened, where Rav Huna says the money changer would be responsible, then the treasurer of Hekdesh should be responsible for Me'ila also in that case. Any use which should obligate the money changer in a normal case of depositing, any case which should obligate the money changer should thereby obligate the treasurer of Hekdesh because he's the one who misappropriated the funds of Hekdesh and gave it to the money changer in a way that he shouldn't have. So why did we specifically teach in a case of the money being given to the money changer, not sealed, that if he uses the money, only then would the treasurer be responsible? It sounds like afilu lo hotzinami, even if the money changer didn't spend the money, but something happened like an ones, that too would obligate the treasurer. So Amar Lei responds Rav Huna.
It would obligate the treasurer as Me'ila? As Me'ila. Or as a Balchayt?
As Me'ila, because we're dealing with funds of Hekdesh, yeah. Right? So what's the obligation as Baal Chov to Hekdesh?
You were responsible for the money, and now the money's lost. So you're responsible to pay back.
That's true, but by most, Hekdesh, it's not purely a monetary thing, right? There's a ritual component.
Are we making him liable for Me'ila on account of, let's say, it sank at sea? There's no Me'ila there. There's no misappropriation.
The case here is he took Hekdesh funds and he thought it was his own. And he gave it to the Shulchani saying, yeah, it's my money. And he made a mistake. That's why it's Me'ila.
That's not a Chiddush.
I don't know if this is necessarily a Chiddush, this Tosefta, but it's just stating out the dinim. Right? So basically, I think all we're saying is a treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash is watching the funds. He's not allowed to use them in any mundane way.
And he gave it to someone else.
If he gives it to a money changer and the money changer uses it in a way that would not be ideal, then that would constitute Me'ila on behalf of the treasurer.
That I understand. But if something happened to it,
let's say
my era had Nansu. What Me'ila was there if Nansu?
The money was used. That already is.
It sank at sea. Tova Bayam.
Okay, but then we lost funds at the
Beis HaMikdash. We lost funds. There's no Me'ila.
But that's an Isser Me'ila still, no?
No.
You're saying only there's Hana.
Again, the Me'ila is he gave it to the guy saying, it's my money. And it was Hekdesh money.
Let's see Rashi, because I think this helps to clarify. But what Rashi's saying is basically the fact that the Gizbar gives money over to the Shulchani in a way that he can use it is already Me'ila. Let's see Rashi's second to last one in the Gemara before the Mishnah. V'i Amar Afilu Nansu. If you think that even in a case of onsen, the Mishnah at the top of the Amud was mechayev the money changer for the responsibility of the maos, it would turn out that from the time the treasurer gave the money to the money changer, yatsu mirshus hektish uvau lirshus shulchani, the money has already left the possession of the Beis HaMikdash and come into the possession of the money changer. V'nasa kamosha lovalo, I saw a bunch of different girsas that change it to basically being, it's as if the treasurer has lent money to the money changer. V'eino tza gedula mizu. There's no greater expenditure, there's no greater use of the funds of Hekdesh, or misappropriation of the funds of Hekdesh, and therefore my area hotzi. So the Gemara is assuming that so long as you're transferring the rights, the possession, from the treasurer to the money changer, that constitutes me'ila, and if you assume that that can happen even through own sin, as we see from the Mishnah at the top of the Amud and the ensuing discussion, then the Tosefta should not necessarily say hotzi, afilu lo hotzinami, even other cases. Seemingly would obligate the treasurer in Me'ilah.
Look at the earlier Rashi.
Rashi
says, Nishkash shehipkid mos hegdesh katsavar shehim shalo.
I haven't seen it. What's the deal with Rasko?
He has a...
The ho'il benosno...
The whole banana mahana the bailim,
yeah. Hamavkid mos
Gizbar
shehivkid mos hektish kasavar shehim shalo. So he took
one. The shulchani thought that they were the
Gizbar.
No, shehivkid mos hektish kasavar shehim shalo. Oh, the Gizbar thought it was his.
Yeah,
I think Rudy's right because we assume that Me'ila only happens through shogeg, not through mezid. Me'ila only happens when one mistakenly violates Me'ilah, but not when one intentionally does. So if he knew for sure that it was the Beis HaMikdash, then it wouldn't violate Me'ilah, I'm pretty sure.
He was not allowed to do it, but it's not a Me'ilah.
Right, you're not allowed to do it, but it wouldn't be Chayv and Korban Me'ilah. Yeah. Asha Me'ilah. Yeah.
Okay.
So fine. So that's Gemara's point. Kasha against Rav Huna. It sounds like you shouldn't be treated as a Shoel because the Tosefta specifically taught Hotzi, specifically taught that the money changer uses the money, but it sounds like according to Rav Huna, even Onsen would have obligated the money changer and thereby obligated the treasure. So Amar Lei responds, Rav Huna deflecting the question of Rav Nachman, who had din afogav the lo hotzi. Really, it's true that even if the money changer did not use the money, but something happened like an ones, that too would obligate the treasurer. V'aydi detana reisha hotzi, tana seifa nami hotzi. But because the beginning of the Tosefta specifically taught hotzi, and that's a case where the money changer was not supposed to use the money, and therefore the treasurer would not be obligated for me'ilah. So then, just for parallel structure, Tana Seifa Nami Hotzi, the second case where the money changer did have permission to use the money, also we taught a specific case of Hotzi, but really according to Rav Huna, that too could have been a case of an Ansu, because that would also obligate the treasurer, the money changer would be treated like a borrower, like a Shoel, and then the treasurer will be obligated, even if an onus happens to the money. So that's Gemara's discussion about depositing money with a money changer or with other types of people. Now says the Mishnah, Hashaleach yad bepikadon. Let's say somebody uses an item that was deposited to him. Beit Shammai omrim yilak bechaser uveyeter. Says Beit Shammai, the person who uses the deposit is going to be responsible for the value of the item, whether it increases or whether it decreases. And the Gemara is going to explain exactly what all these positions in Tanaim in the Mishnah mean. Ubeis Hillel omrim kishas hotza. Beis Hillel say, no, the person who uses the item only has to pay whatever the value of the item is at the time that he uses the item. And Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kishas Hatfiyah. Rabbi Akiva says, you have to pay the value that the item was worth at the time that the depositor makes a claim from you and says, hey, you owe me money, so whatever the item is going to be worth at that time, that's what you'd have to pay. And the Gemara is going to go on to explain all these shitos and discuss thoroughly. So Amar Rabba, says Rabba, this is a statement that we saw way back when in Baba Kama, that Haiman de Gazel Chavisa de Hamra Mechavre, if one steals a barrel of wine from his friend, Meikara Shavya Zuza, Hashta Shavya Arba, if initially the barrel of wine was worth one zuz, and now the barrel of wine is worth four times that, four zuz, then Tavra Oshasye Meshalem Arba. If you break the barrel of wine, or you drink the barrel of wine, you would have to pay four zuz for the barrel of wine that you stole. Itmar Mimeila Mishalim Zuza. If the barrel happens to just break on its own, then you would only have to pay one zuz. So my time, I asked Gemara, what's the reason for both of these dinim? Why is it that when you break it or drink it, you have to pay four zuz, and when it breaks automatically, you only have to pay one? So Kaven di Isa Hadra Lamar Be'ene, since if you still had the barrel, you could just return it to the owner the way it is. So Hayishaita de Kashatile, oh de Katavarla Kagazomine. Because you could always just return the barrel, then we assume that the time in which you drink the wine, or you break the barrel, that's the time at which you're stealing the barrel. Utnan kola gazlane mishalmin kishasagzela. And we have a Mishnah which says that all thieves pay like the price at the time of the theft. So basically, because you're stealing the barrel at the time that you're drinking it, or the time that you're breaking it, you have to pay the price at that point. And how much is it worth at that point? 4 zuz. But if bar memela mishalim zuza mai taima, if it breaks on its own, then you would only have to pay 1 zuz. Why is that? Because hashta lo avila velo midi, you're not doing anything to the barrel; it's just breaking on its own. And therefore, amai kamachayvus lei, what are you making the person responsible for? Ahi shaita de gazla, you're making him responsible for the time when he first stole it, not the time when it broke, because he didn't do anything when it broke. You're only obligating him on the time that he stole it, and haishaita zuzahu deshavya. At that point, when he stole it, it was only worth 1 zuz. So that's why you would be obligated 1 zuz if it broke on its own, but 4 zuz if you broke it or drank it. So now the Gemara is going to try to square off this statement of Rabbah with the Mishnah that we just quoted, and thereby it's going to explain all the positions in Tanoim, Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, etc. So it's not, we quote that Mishnah that we just discussed. Beis Hillel omrim kishas otza. Beis Hillel say that you have to pay the price at the time that you use the item that you stole. Or the deposit, rather. So my kishas hotza. What is Beis Hillel saying when they say that you have to pay like the price at the time that you use the item? Ilema kishas hotza mina olam. If Beis Hillel are saying that you pay according to the price at which you remove the item from the world. You use it in a way that it's no longer extant. Uve mai. Well, what's the case that we're dealing with? Are we dealing with a case, e bechaser, if it's a case where the item depreciated in value, then mi'ika lemanda amar, would anybody say that you would pay the lower price? Va'atznan kol ha'gezlanim mishalmin kishas ha'gzela. We have an explicit Mishnah which says that you should, of course, have to pay the price that the item was worth at the time that you stole it. So if we're dealing with a case where you use the item in a way that removes it from the world, and it depreciated in value, obviously, Beis Hillel are not going to say that you pay that lower value. You, of course, have to pay the higher value that it was worth at the time that you stole it. Ve'i b'yeter, and if you have to pay the higher amount according to Beis Hillel, right, because we're saying kishas hotza, like the price that it was worth at the time that you used it, that you removed it from the world, if the item increased in value and you have to pay that higher value, hainu Beis Shammai, that's the same as the position of Beis Shammai, which said, yiloke b'chaser b'yeter. Beis Shammai said that you have to pay either the higher amount or the lower amount, and you pay whichever one is going to obligate you more. So if all Beis Hillel are trying to tell us is that you have to pay this higher amount, that's the same as Beis Shammai. Elapshita kishas hotza mi Beis Bailin. It's clear then that what Beis Hillel are saying when they say kishas hotza mina olam is, kishas hotza rather, is that it's like the value at the time that you remove it from the house of the owner. If that's what Beis Hillel are saying, that you have to pay the value at the time that you remove it from the house of the owner, then lema Rabba de Amar ke Beis Shammai? Is that to suggest then that Rabba, who made this statement about the barrel of wine, is saying like Beis Shammai? Why would that be like Beis Shammai? Because Rabba said, if you steal a barrel of wine from the house of an owner and it's worth 1 zuz, and then it increases in value and become 4 zuz, if you drink it or break it, you would have to pay 4 zuz. But if Beis Hillel here are saying that you have to pay kishas hotzah mi beis habaylim, like the price at the time that you remove it from the house of the owner, in Rabba's case of the barrel of wine, you would only have to pay 1 zuz, because that's how much it was worth when you took it from the house of the owner, even if it increased in value to 4 zuz by the time you drank it or broke it. So how could it be? Did Rabba really make a statement like Beis Shammai? So amalecha Rabba beyeter kule amalo pliki. Rabba would tell you that if the item increased in value, then everybody would agree that you have to pay the higher amount. Ki pligi bechaser. The machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is only if the item decreased in value. Beis Shammai sabri shlichas yad eina tzricha chisaron. Beis Shammai assume that in order to be obligated for using the item that was deposited with you, you don't need the item to necessarily decrease in value. The ki chaser b'shuta didei chaser. And when the item actually did decrease in value, in this case, this hypothetical case where the item decreased in value, we assume it's decreasing in the possession of the person who's watching the deposit, and that's why you're going to be obligated for the decrease in value. According to Beis Hillel, taking ownership or use of the item that was deposited with you requires that the item decrease in value. And therefore, b'chi chaser b'rshuta demare chaser. When the item is decreasing in value, we're assuming that it's decreasing in value in the possession of the original owner. Only once it decreases in value will it then come into your possession, because you only have shlichus yad, according to Beis Hillel. You only take possession of this item when the item decreases in value. But prior to that, it's still assumed to be in the possession of the owner. Whereas Beis Shammai would say, no, to take possession as the person watching the deposit, you don't need the item to decrease in value. Therefore, you've already taken possession prior to the decrease. And when it decreases, it's decreasing in your own possession, but you would be obligated to pay the higher price. So that would be the machlokas according to Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Rashi says, let's just try to say it quickly, ki pligi bechaser, the ka'amri Beis Hillel, kashas hotza min olam, the second Rashi on the page, that the whole machlokas is when the item decreases in value. Beis Hillel still say that you only have to pay the price that it's worth at the time that you remove it from the world. Udika kasha lecha kol ha-gazlanim mishalmim kashas ha-gzela. And the question that we posed from the Mishnah earlier, which said that all thieves have to pay like the price at the time of theft, if you really stole the item originally from the house of the owner, that would be true, that you'd have to pay like the price at the time that you stole it. But in this case, where they're arguing over a deposit which came into your possession with permission, and they're arguing over shlichus yad, you're obligating the person because of using the deposit which was deposited with him, then that's going to be the machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, whether shlichus yad requires chisaron, whether it requires the item to depreciate or not. And that's going to be the machlokas, whether the item is then depreciating in the possession of the person watching the deposit, according to Beis Shammai, or in the possession of the owner, according to Beis Hillel. So now that we've established the machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel as being about whether shlichus yad needs chisaron or not, then we're always going to pose a new question against Rava before we're discussing Rava. Elaha dam Rava shlichus yad ainet tzricha chisaron lema Rava damar ke Beis Shammai. Well, Rava makes this statement that shlichus yad ainet tzricha chisaron, that using the item which was deposited with you does not necessarily require a depreciation in the value of the item. So is Rava making that statement like Beis Shammai? We just said that that was the position of Beis Shammai, but we always assume we try to be like Beis Hillel. So why would Rava, so many generations later, make this statement which is in accordance with Beis Shammai? So says Gemara, you're right. We must have gotten the machlokas wrong. The case must be, and this discussion really parallels the discussion that we had just a couple davim ago, I think Mem Aleph or Mem Aleph. The case must be that you move the item, you move the deposit to use as a ladder to bring, I think Gozalas here we're saying are like birds that you're using on the ladder. Uvasho shalom midas kamifliki. And it's a case of someone borrowing the item without the permission of the person who lent it to him, because you're using it in an abnormal way, using it as a ladder when it obviously was not intended to be used in such a way. Veshamai sabri sho shalom midas gazlan havi. Beis Shammai assume that if one borrows an item inappropriately without the permission of the person who owns the item, that's treated like a thief. And when the item depreciates in value, it depreciates in the possession of the thief, and therefore you're going to be responsible to pay the higher amount because it was just depreciating in your own possession. And Beis Hillel assume that one who uses a borrowed item improperly is still treated like a borrower, but the item still technically belongs to the original owner, and when the item depreciates in value, we assume it's depreciating in value in the possession of the owner. So now the machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is no longer about whether shlichus yad needs chisaron, whether using the item needs a decrease in value, but rather it relates to whether a shol shalom midas is a thief or not. According to Beis Shammai, yes. According to Beis Hillel, no. So now the Gemara has a new question. El hadam Rava shol shalom midas, the Rabbanan gazlan havi, when Rava makes this statement that a borrower who misuses the item in a way the owner does not know about, according to the position of the Rabbanan, this comes up in Bava Basra, I believe, actually, that borrower is treated like a thief, he's a gazlan. So lema Rava da Amar ke Beis Shammai? Is Rava making that statement again like Beis Shammai? How could it be that he's going like Beis Shammai in this machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? So Gemara says, yeah, you're right, that would pose a major question to our explanation. Rather, the debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel must be about the increase in value of the theft. Beishamai Savri, Shevach Zela Dinigzol Havi. Beishamai assume that if a stolen item increases in value, that increase belongs to the person from whom the item was stolen, the original owner. Beishamai Savri, Shevach Zela Digazban Havi. And Beis Hillel assumed that the increase in value belongs to the thief, not to the original owner.
Are we talking about increase in value as a result of the Gazlan input?
No, I don't think it's as a result of the Gazlan input. Let's see, because the Mara is going to say it relates to the following machlokas. If a plug to the Hani Tanai, it's in accordance with the following machlokas Tanai. The Tanya, as the Braisa says, Hagozel es harachel. Let's say a person steals a sheep. Gazza v'yalda mishalim otav es gizoseh v'es vladoseh divrei Rabbi Meir. And let's say you shear the sheep, and the sheep also gives birth to a baby. You have to pay back the stolen sheep, and you have to pay the shearings, and you have to pay the children, according to Rabbi Meir. But Rabbi Huda omer zela chuzeres be'enel. Rabbi Huda says that the theft returns the way it is now. You wouldn't have to return the shearings, and you wouldn't have to return the baby. You basically stole a sheep. You pay back a sheep. Dekanami, let's just go one more line and then I'll get back to Moshe's question. Dekanami, Dikani, Beishamai Omrim, Yilaka, Bechaser, Uviyater, Ubeishil Omrim, Keshas Hotza, Shmamina. And the Gemara says we have a diuk that in the Mishnah that this is the machlokas between Beishamai and Beishil, that they're arguing over the increase in value of the theft. Why? Because Beishamai specifically said that the person who stole it is punished, so to speak, Yilaka is whipped with the chaser v'yeter, the increase and decrease in value. And Beis Hillel say that you have to pay keshas hotzah, that you have to pay like the value at the time that you use the item. So what's the diuk the Gemara is trying to make? If you look in Rashi, dekanami, right across on the page, dekanami de begizos revados pligi diktani lashon chaser v'yeter velo katani lashon zol v'yoker. It's clear that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are arguing over things like the shearings or the children of the stolen item because it specifically uses the language of the item increasing or decreasing in value. Literally, adding or subtracting. Velo katani lashon zol v'yoker, it doesn't talk about it becoming cheaper or more expensive. So it's not about price fluctuations, but it's actually about things, you know, departing the item, either being sheared off of the sheep or being removed, you know, so born
presumably
from the sheep.
If the Gazlan spent money improving it, it would presumably belong to him. Any input that the Gazlan made in the Gazela would presumably belong to him.
Right, that was the discussion in the first parak, whether the Gazlan gets the Shevach or not, presumably would come to him, although certainly subject to a machlokas. Good. So says the Gemara Vayter, those are the positions of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, but now we have the position of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva Omer Keshas HaTfiyah. Says Rabbi Akiva, you have to pay like the value at the time that the person makes a claim from you. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halachok Rabbi Akiva. Says Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel that we paskin like Rabbi Akiva. Umode Rabbi Akiva b'makom sheyesh edim. Rabbi Akiva is mode, according to this version, we'll see a change to this in a little bit, but Rabbi Akiva is mode in a situation where you have edim. What does that mean, a situation where you have edim? Says Rashi, kama haita shava biyom shegazla, biro shegazla heimenu demishalim keshas hagzela. If you have edim, witnesses, testifying how much the item was worth on the day that you stole it, and they saw that you stole it, then you would have to pay according to the price at the time of theft, not according to the price at the time of the claim. My time, why is Rabbi Akiva Moda if there are witnesses testifying about the price at the time of the theft? Because the pasuk says that you have to return the value to the person to whom you are responsible. And since there are witnesses, it's from the time that you stole it, where there are witnesses testifying, A, that you stole it, and B, how much it was worth at the time that you stole it, that's the time at which you become responsible, that's the time at which you become guilty, literally. And since this pasuk, which describes your obligation, is the source for the obligation to pay, Rabbi Akiva is going to agree that if the time for the obligation arrives earlier, based on the testimony of the Edom, based on the value that the Edom testify and ascribe to the object, you're going to be obligated by that higher value. Amar Rav Oshia, the Rav Yehuda, Rabbi, Ata Omer Kain. So Rav Oshia now says to Rav Yehuda, who just said, made this statement in the name of Shmuel, that A, halach Rabbi Akiva, that we pass on like Rabbi Akiva, you pay keshas hatfiyah, and also that Rabbi Akiva's modeh, if you have Aiden, that you have to pay the price at the time that you stole it. So Rav Yehuda, you're telling me that. Bahachi Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Asi, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, said something different.
He said, Chalak haya Rabbi Akiva, afilu b'makom sheyesh eidim. That Rabbi Akiva disagrees and thinks you only have to pay the value at the time that the claim was made against you, even if there were eidim testifying, A, that you stole the item, and B, how much it was worth at the time that you stole it. You don't have to pay the value at the time of the theft. My time, why is that? Da'amar kra la'ashir hulo yitanenu b'yom ashmato, quoting from the same pasuk, that you have to give the value to the person from the day that you're responsible to him. Ubeidina hu dekamachai v'le oshma. The Beis Din, the court, is the one who makes you responsible, who makes you guilty, who obligates you to pay the person back, and therefore, the time at which you became obligated to that person is not at the time that it was stolen, and the witnesses testified, A, that you stole it, and B, how much it was worth. Rather, the time at which you become obligated is the time when the court makes you responsible. That's roughly around the time that the tviya happens, the time that the guy makes a claim against you, and thus, Rabbi Akiva disagrees and still thinks you only have to pay kishas ha-tviya. Yeah.
So the first opinion seems to hold that the Eidim are more than just Eidim Raya, that they're also Eidim Kiyam, that they establish the... In other words, in Gittin Kedushin we have...
Right, but Eidim Kiyam is when you're making like a transaction or a halos. Here, we're not...
It's a halos.
You're saying it's a halos, that's the
theft. At that moment, he becomes obligated. Right. That's a big Kiddush.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, 100%. Amar le Rabbi Zeira le Rabbi Abba Bar Papa, says Rabbi Zeira to Rabbi Abba Bar Papa, says Rabbi Zeira to Rabbi Abba Bar Papa, when you go there, where's there? Eretz Yisrael. When you go to Eretz Yisrael, go in a way that's kind of inconvenient for you. Go up around Sulma de Tzur, and go approach Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, go visit him. And ask him if he knows whether Rabbi Yochanan paskin like Rabbi Akiva or whether he did not. Because again, all we had seen was one version of Rabbi Yochanan where he says Rabbi Akiva disagrees and thinks you only have to pay kishas hatviya even if they're eidim. But Rabbi Yochanan didn't tell us whether he paskins like Rabbi Akiva or not. Only Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel had told us that he paskins like Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Zeira says to Rabbi Abba Bar Papa, go get a psak from Rabbi Yochanan. Does he paskin like Rabbi Akiva or not? So Amar Le, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha Rabbi Akiva Le'ola. To which Rabbi Abba Bar Papa responds to Rabbi Zeira and says, Rabbi Yochanan said, we always paskin like Rabbi Akiva, le'olam. So what does that mean, le'olam? My le'olam, asked the Gemara. What does it mean, le'olam? I think the Gemara is assuming, I'm just saying this now, but I think the Gemara is assuming, le'olam can't mean that we paskin like Rabbi Akiva in all cases, because we have a klal when it comes to paskin like Rabbi Akiva. In general, we assume, halachic Rabbi Akiva mechaveiro velo mechaveiro, that we paskin like Rabbi Akiva against Bar Plukta, against someone he's disputing, but not if he's disputing the Rabbim, if he's disputing the masses, we would not paskin like him. So L'olam probably doesn't mean we paskin like him in all cases. What does L'olam mean? So Amar Rav Ashi, Shelo Tomar Hani Mili Hecha Deleka Edim, Aval Hecha Deika Edim Lo. Says Rav Ashi, don't think that Rabbi Akiva only says you pay kishas hatfiyah, you pay like the value at the time of the claim where there are no witnesses. But where there are witnesses, then you would not pay the value of the claim. So you should know that Rabbi Akiva disagrees, even if there are witnesses, you would still only pay the value at the time of the claim, and that's consistent with what we just quoted from Rabbi Akiva, from Rabbi Yochanan rather, that Cholakaya Rabbi Akiva afilu b'makom sheyesh eidim. So that's one possibility of why we said le'olam, that it means even if there are witnesses. Be'inami, alternatively, maybe the case where le'olam, we still pass like Rabbi Akiva, is the hadra le'duchta v'itbera. If you bring the item, you put it back in its initial place, and it becomes broken. And that's to go against Rabbi Yishmael, who said we don't need the knowledge of the owner that the item has been returned. If you remember, we've had a machlokas, it's come up a few times now, at the end of Baba Kama, and also in the last couple of dapim, that there's a machlokas, Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva, when you're returning an item that was stolen, whether you need the knowledge of the owner that you returned it. According to Rabbi Yishmael, no. According to Rabbi Akiva, yes. So maybe la'olam here means that even if you return the item to its place and it became broken, you are going to be responsible against Rabbi Shmuel, who thinks you don't need das bailim, consistent with Rabbi Akiva, who always says, kamash malan deba'inan das bailim, that you do need the knowledge of the owner. But Rava Amar, halacha k'beis Hillel, Rava says the halacha is like Beis Hillel, that you pay kishas hotza, not like Rabbi Akiva, that you pay kishas hatfiya. And says Rashi, how do we paskin in this machlokas? Should we go like Rabbi Akiva or should we go like Beis Hillel? Says Rashi, Va'anan kirava avdinan dahavale basra. We paskin like Rava because he's later than all the other Amorayim that we quoted, and thus we're going to paskin like Beis Hillel that you pay kishas hatfiyah. Maybe let's just try to get a preview into the next kishas hotza. Yeah, kishas hotza mina olam. Maybe let's just try to get a preview with the next Mishnah. Not such a hard Mishnah. Hachoshev lishloach yad bepikaron. Let's say one intends to use an item that was deposited with him, but has not actually used it. Rashi explains that the case of intending or thinking about using the item is that you said in front of witnesses that you're going to use this item which was deposited with you. So according to Beishama, you're obligated. Even just having that intention, even just thinking about it, saying to witnesses that you're going to do it, is enough to obligate you, as if you've actually used the item that was deposited with you. But according to Beis Hillel, no, you're only obligated once you actually use it. Because the Pasuk specifically describes actually using the item, not just intent. Now, hita et achavit v'natel haymeneh revius v'nishbara. Let's say a person tilts a barrel of wine that was deposited with him, and he takes a revius out of it, and then the barrel becomes broken. Eino mishalim el revius. You're only obligated to pay for the revius that you remove from the barrel. You're not obligated for the rest of the barrel. Why not? Because we assume, since you never lifted the barrel, even in removing the wine, all you did was tilt it, but you didn't actually lift it up, you were never kona the whole barrel, and you're only going to be responsible for the revius that you removed from it. But higbia benatal himena revius v'nishbara, let's say you actually lifted up the whole barrel, and then you only removed the revius, and then the whole barrel became broken, mishalim demei kula, you would have to pay for the value of the entire barrel, because we assume you were kona it with your hagbah by picking up the barrel. Okay, we'll hold over here.
Thank you very much.